Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is going to get their ass whooped over this thing.
Hello, hello, hello. Sorry for coming on late. Hello, hello again. Sorry for coming on late. I didn't know if I was going to come on at all tonight because I had craziest would be an understatement. And let me make sure the sound is okay here. It's mainly for me because I am deaf, which was probably self-inflicted, but you know, all that loud music. You ever notice you don't hear that? You don't hear that like you used to anymore? You don't hear so much, because that all originated down here, the loud bass music from Miami. You don't seem to hear cars with 5,000 watt amps and 18-inch subwoofers in the back anymore, booming along the road for whatever reason. They said that this generation, when I did the whole generational breakdown thing, had the highest rate of premature hearing loss. I think it was in my bracket, which is I'm right on the border of the Generation X. It depends which chart you look at. But I'm not sure if I want to claim them, but the millennials, I'm not sure if I want to claim them either. I would be either the oldest millennial or probably the youngest Gen Xer. But I named this show the Crazy Recap Continued Show after that kind of disastrous September one about the anniversary show, because it seemed like after that, and I have not really spoken to him since, it seemed like we had nothing but bad luck independently of each other. Coincidentally, independently of each other, we both suffered from a string of unfortunate events that were closely linked together, not with each other, just a string of or series of unfortunate events occurred to both of us. My son likes to run sometimes. My young son likes to run sometimes. When I grew up in this area, I'll preface this a little bit. I named the show, the subtitle was DCF, Law and the Philosophy Behind Government, Where is True Authority Derived? Now, well, I'll get into it, but let me do preface it a little bit first. I grew up in this area. When I first moved down here, I was about 3, 4. I was young. And a lot of the area was a strawberry field, and you would get on the back of a tractor and they would take you out into the field to pick a bunch of strawberries. You'd jump back on and then they'd drive you back, and it was called Bo's You Pick 'em. And it was, you know, as hick or, you know, that sort of down home as it could get. And not too long after, shortly thereafter, somebody saw an opportunity to expand the main road that leads to the town and build up some neighborhoods, which became the first kind of big. It was like a secular, you know, mixed neighborhood, middle class neighborhood, average, you know, American middle class neighborhood, I'd say. We had bobcats in the backyards, you know, raccoons, bass in the lakes. And it was, because it's South Florida, it was kind of like, it wasn't swamp. It wasn't like where you see airboats. The airboats are those flat boats with the big fans that propel them across they sort of skim across the surface of the water. That's a little further west, not much further, maybe just a few miles further. But this was a little bit further east towards where the beach is. So So if you want a picture where I'm at, South Florida, about an hour north of Miami, depending how fast you drive. And then about 7 miles east is the beach. So for some people, they consider that biking or walking distance. So if you were listing the property, you could actually say it's almost like a beachfront place. It seems a lot further when you're driving. It's retirement. It's a famous town because people have mentioned it in a lot of different movies, and a lot of people know it for being the town that Jerry Seinfeld's parents retired to. In fact, he told a joke that Steve Buscemi repeated. He said, "My parents didn't want to retire when they turned 65 and move south or to Miami or wherever," he said, but they turned 65 and the law said they had to. It was a joke, something like that, to that effect. And that's kind of true down here. That's kind of how it was. Originally, people would come down to Miami. And it was right around the time when Scarface was big, that movie. That really happened. The preface, the opening thing in that movie where it talks about Castro releasing all of the, you know, the undesirables. He was sort of emptying out the political prisoners and some of the crazy people, and he sent them over to Miami. So that was written around that time. MTV was brand new at the time. That show, Miami Vice, was happening here. Nobody dressed like that, but it was the whole. It was almost like the focal point of the. When I was little growing up, it just coincided with that. And it seemed like all the attention was on that area most specifically. But we moved a little bit further north. And the town, like I said, was not quite, you know, developed. And then it started to be. And the reason I'm getting into that is because when I was younger, I was maybe all of a 4 years old now at this point, and this neighborhood's getting bigger. There's still bobcats. You'd see them, and you know they'd run, but they could be dangerous, and the raccoons and stuff. And you just ran around, and there was this giant wooded area behind the neighborhood. And it ended up becoming the middle because they built neighborhoods around it, and they called it, I forgot what they called it, but they called it this area because it was so wooded, it had a name. And kids would build these giant tree, they weren't houses, they were like high trapeze things, you know, like in the circus. You know, they built things up that high, and they would walk across them. So it was super dangerous is what I'm getting at. And nobody cared. You know, you just rode your bikes. It was a lot like E.T. or Stranger Things. It was similar to that, where it was kind of like what the free range, and I want to make this point, there's a parenting movement kind of as a backlash to all of this safetiness and, you know, this like we didn't have car seats. I don't know what you want to call the other side, but this free, let's say, there's free range parents, okay? I'm not going off on a tangent. I'm trying to tie all this together. And what they do is they let their kids walk around, and the kids either wear a shirt or they say this mantra that basically says, "I am a free range kid. I am not lost. I will talk to strangers, but I won't go with them. I know where I live. I know how to cross the street. You know, please don't call the police on me or anything like that. I'm basically like just, you know, I'm just doing what kids did all the years ago when I was young." Maybe they're a little bit more independent, but it's a movement. Why did they have to come up with a movement like this? Is there a reaction to, or it was to limit the liability of what they have now, which are these mandated reporters. So what is that? Basically, if you run into a first responder, a doctor, a fireman, a policeman, somebody who's going to come into contact where some sort of intervention is going to take place, on their behalf, and they're going to get involved with you, where there would be some sort of liability, because everything is running, you know, under this contract UCC law, where, you know, we're a very litigious society, and people get sued a lot, especially here. That's another thing that we're pretty known for, or at least we were in the 80s. I remember the expression, take them to the cleaners, and that sort of mentality, and it permeated everything, and I'm going to call my lawyer, that sort of thing, the ambulance chasers, that mentality. Well, because of that, they have to limit liability. So another reaction on the other side is, because people are pulling their children out of schools and they're doing this homeschooling thing, they have to find ways to get back into, penetrate the family. And if you pull your child out of all of these mixed intramural events and they never see them, and you dislodge them from that public school system apparatus, the only way back in would be to come up with an agency like the Department of Children and Family Services, which there may be good people that work there. I'm not casting aspersions on the individual people, but there's also a lot of ineptitude and malfeasance and stuff that can go on when you give different groups a lot of authority. And a lot of it, if just through virtue of stupidity or mistakes or having somebody who thinks they're a true crusader to do good, can end up wielding that power and misusing it. So basically what had happened was, okay, I'll go back, because these people have actually involved themselves. I'm a very private person. I talk a lot when I'm on this, because I have to talk a lot, otherwise it'll just be silent. But for the most part, I kind of am quiet and keep to myself, and you know, polite when I see people. I wave, you know, I know my neighbors, they know me, everybody gets along with me, and I like it like that. But I don't go out of my way to have a lot of social interactions and things. Maybe when I was younger a little bit, but I was always kind of kept to myself, and I prefer that. So if somebody saw something going on that was, you know, really wrong, like I'll give you an example. In that old neighborhood that I grew up in, when it started to switch over, when they built the school behind there, that was the Jewish school, there was a little girl that was on a swing set, and she was about to fall, it looked like to me. And I bolted from my backyard, because there was no fence separating the 2 yards. And when you opened them up like that, it was a huge distance, and I didn't see any adult in sight. So I ran over and I intervened, and I kind of caught the little girl. I mean, she was probably like a year old maybe, and she was placed up high on the thing. Now, the dad came out and he looked at me like I was crazy, but he also thanked me, you know, for being concerned. But I left it at that. I didn't report him or anything. Nowadays, you have these people that are mandated reporters, these first responders, and what their task to do is, if they see something, let's say, like that, or if they saw a mother slapping their child, because this happened, I'm drawing from real events that they were actually called out on. If they saw that, they would be mandated to report it so that they wouldn't get in trouble. So that way, if the person they saw was actually slapping this child, and they didn't say anything, and then the child ended up hurt later on, and they were the last one to see it, somehow liability or whatever could happen to them. At least that's their excuse by which they operate and by which they like to go after people. But in my case, the way that it's been has been through sort of in a backbiting kind of a way, in a malicious kind of a way, like people trying to get even. And it hasn't really been, I don't think, with real concern in any kind of way. I think they've been using it to sort of target this family. So in the old days, we didn't have seatbelts. We would jump back and forth. I remember my mom was driving a station wagon and I was hopping from the very back of the station wagon, that, you know, elongated trunk part, over the seat into the, you know, the back, and sometimes jumping up into the front. And I have big feet, so even as a kid, you know, I was probably almost kicking my mom in the head, probably swerving the car all over the road. But to my recollection, I don't remember anybody except babies having car seats. I remember that we just, you know, piled in there. And if you could fit a bunch of kids in the back and you were the driver, then you drove. And if you had it, and everybody had a station wagon before SUVs were popularized. And to my recollection, where I grew up, we did. So it was more like the Wild West, and we had the undeveloped land and the, you know, the, I remember falling out of one of those tree houses and I got a nail through my hand, and my mom took me in to get a tetanus shot. I think I had a tetanus shot every Christmas Eve. You know, somebody bit me, I got a tetanus shot. I got a nail in my hand, I got a tetanus shot. Somebody looked at me funny, I got a tetanus shot. My mom was kind of a hypochondriac. So anyway, it was a lot crazier, but I survived it. You know, for good or for bad, I survived it. Well, now, every single thing that you do in the very same town, my son got a strep throat. He was sick for about 2 weeks. And the way I knew it was a strep throat was I hadn't had one since I was a kid. When I was a kid, I got them a lot, or so I'm told. I remember them, but I don't, you know, I don't remember specifically seeing the test results, but that's what I was told. And they even removed my tonsils, which is a whole other show, but I'm not going to do medicine. So what happened was that I figured this was the same thing. I was sore, you know, he was sick. 2 weeks had gone by, the medicine they had given him hadn't done anything. He was worse than the day that we brought him in. So I hadn't gone to the visit the first time. So I said, listen, we're all sick now. Now we're all going to go. So I got up. I was up maybe 2 hours before the place opened. This is the pediatrician that Dan Marino, I think, goes to, because his pictures are over the wall. And it's a nice place in this nice town. So I call them, and I'm in a little bit of a, not a panic, but I'm concerned. And I'm saying, hey, look, we got to come in immediately. You know, my son's sick. I think he was brought here 2 weeks ago. His medicine's out. We need to, you know, reevaluate what's going on here. I need the earliest appointment. And I hadn't slept, and I'm sick. And, you know, I'm being overly cautious. My dad's an MD, so he tells me, yes, you know, do this. So we go there. And I say this to the doctor, and I tell her, you know, hey, look, my dad is an infectious disease doctor, and he said maybe you should try and do a throat culture. You know, I used to get a lot of them. And she looks at me like, okay, we can do that, but maybe the way I said it sounded more threatening than that. I can't imagine to this day what it might have been. And so she came back with the prongs. And she said, well, it's very hard to do that on a child this age because, look, you know, every adult hate getting this, but, you know, swabbing the back of your throat until you cough. And what happened was that she didn't come back for a long time. And all of a sudden, two uniformed police officers showed up. And they didn't even know why they were there. Nobody knows why they were there to this day. So what happened was that I said, what are you here to do? Help. And they said, are you okay? And I said, well, no, I have a strep throat. I haven't slept. And my son is sick, you know, and it's not good. So I said, what do you want me to do? Touch my nose, do all that stuff. And I'm kind of making a joke of it, and they start laughing, and they're like, oh, we understand. I said, because at first they had their game faces on. They said, oh, no, we understand what's going on here now. They said, listen, let's just go out the back door and not say anything and, you know, not bother anybody else. Here's your medications and the prescriptions and stuff. Let's just go home. Do you have somebody that can drive you guys? I said, look, it's 5 minutes down the road. I can drive. They said, well, we'd be more comfortable if you guys had somebody pick you up and then come back and get your car in like a couple hours just so that no one else complains. So they're really cool, really nice. Seems like everything is, you know, okay. We go home, come back later, pick up the car. He gets better. All of a sudden, we get a knock at the door. And it is this Department of Children and Family woman. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I need to see this. Wants to see the refrigerator, wants to see the place to sleep. You know, I said, I want to cooperate in any way I can, because I'm thinking, you know, just cooperate and that'll make it go smooth. But every time I would cooperate, and I'm not saying anybody shouldn't, in my case, then she wanted to do another thing and another thing. So basically what it came down to was they made you jump through a bunch of hoops. And what they were basically trying to do was sell, they have referrals to different programs. And if they can refer you to these programs, then it's almost like getting put on probation and they never get out of your life. So they may mean well. The person that's doing the job, I could easily see how they could be saying that they, you know, are a good person, they're helping people. But the philosophy behind it is, you know, some people don't think police should exist. Some radical libertarians, you know, don't want to have any kind of, I might be misstating their position, but they want to privatize everything, which it already is. Everything's, you know, basically voluntary for-profit revenue generating. That's the whole joke with libertarianism, is that it's already that system. But what they, you know, the philosophy that they get into is similar to this, like, well, where is this authority of these governmental type agencies like this one? You know, why do we need these kinds of people? They were formed in 1996. What did people do before them? And shouldn't those kinds of matters be handled internally? You know, do we really need a third party to step in who's going to remove the child in the worst case scenario from the home, put them into foster care over some dirty dishes? And this is something Alex Jones had brought up. And they actually do check your refrigerator and look for dirty dishes in the sink. And I said, what is the proper ratio of clean to dirty dishes? What is the improper ratio? Because they don't know. And then I said, what about the bed? How many pillows? You know, how many, you know, what's the proper length of the sheet? How do you rate this sort of thing? I don't think it's set up. I don't think the people themselves are bad. I just think that it's like anything else. It could be taken advantage. It's kind of like when the police are out revenue generating with speeding tickets. I don't think people should be speeding down the road, obviously. And I think that if you go faster than a certain amount, you know, you're endangering your own life and other people's. And when you start to endanger other people's lives, because I've been hit from behind sitting, which is the scariest thing ever to happen when you're just sitting at a light and somebody plows into the back of your car. And the guy hit the back of our car so hard that it hit us into the car in front of us, that hit the car in front of them. And it was an elderly couple with their grandchild, and they all were bleeding out of their heads when they got out. It was horrible. The guy didn't apologize or anything. He just got out, lit up a cigarette. He's drunk as a skunk. So I get it. But when it comes to this second time, this person showed up after my son ran to the pool, and I did not call the police because I was actively searching for him. And all of a sudden I saw a bunch of police cars because they sit in my neighborhood. It's kind of big. There's two pool houses, and he's never gone that far to the one that he went to. But he saw other kids there, and he wanted to play with them. And by the time I made it over there, I saw the police start to drive by there, and I'm on foot running after them. And, you know, when they came, they started asking questions after the dust settled. Well, why didn't you call? Well, my cell phone was in my pocket, but it was cracked at the top, and it had gotten cracked even more as I was running, but I still hadn't thought to do that because I figured I knew where he was, and I'd find him. But when they asked that question, you know, you get a little bit defensive. And they said, well, the procedure is, the mandated reporter procedure is, we have to notify the Department of Children and Family Services. But the way the police, and I've heard them say this on other occasions, they're like, oh, they'll probably not even come out. They don't understand that it's a really big deal when they come out, especially if you get a person from there who's very, very serious about their job. So when they come out, they want to question the child by themselves. They want to basically look up your butt with a flashlight. They want to, they just start to ask to see things, and they kind of play this game where police do this too. They'll pull you over and they'll say, identification, because they want to ID you first. And then they'll say, so when was the last time you were arrested? And it's a question that's it's a probing kind of a question. Well, they do it too. And they say, so people have said that you have issues with drugs and alcohol or psychiatric. They do the same thing. They'll ask a question. It's kind of like the one that says, when did you stop beating your wife? And it's a gotcha question that's thrown in there to make it seem like you did something, you know, that, so and they did that. And I said, listen, let's not play games. You have all the information. I said, nothing new has transpired in the last few years. I said, I lost my father and some family members. I said, but nothing else. I said, any information that you're going to fish for with the questions, I said, you could probably go and look up. I was like, so let's just, you know, get down to the nitty gritty. You know, what do you want? A signature, you know, what? And with each interaction, what I have learned is that not only am I the only person that is going through this, I call a locksmith. Change the lock on the door, he had the same thing happen to him. The OBGYN had somebody call on her for fighting at Sears or something. Somebody saw her and just got on their phone, and now that everybody has cell phones, you know, they can, you know, just make a phone call. And everybody has had this issue, and they will not clear you until they get an allegation and they try to either corroborate or clear it. But they're not really trying to clear it. They're basically trying to, at best, sell you a class and get you involved with, like, if you just mention something like, oh, yeah, we've had issues with, I'm making something up, speech therapy or potty training, or what are issues you have with kids, hitting or something, the kid hitting other kids, I don't know, something like that. They say, oh, we can help you with that. And then they refer you to someone, and they refer to another person. And then all of a sudden you've got somebody coming in your house with a clipboard, and you're having supervised visitation in the guise of a, you know, class or whatever it's called. So some people record And some people don't, when the cop pulls them over on a routine, you know, I want to say this though, if you did it, you know, I don't understand why people do the gamesman stuff with the, you know, the Star of Citizen stuff. I understand that philosophically why people like to challenge it, but if you were speeding and they pulled you over for speeding, then just take the ticket because you were speeding. But I understand why people take precautions because there are, and I said this to the woman, I said, listen, you're probably, you seem like a nice person and you're probably very committed to your job and honest and all that. You know, I gave her all the benefit of the doubt, in other words. But I said, but your boss, this might not be. And before I sign anything, I have to, you know, I'm in charge of this child. I have to make sure that I'm, you know, doing the right thing on his behalf and I'm asserting my rights. And she said, yeah, I agree. So there's some gamesmanship that goes on with it because of the society that we all live in. And because there are messed up people that beat the crap out of their kids and, you know, people suing each other and, you know, people letting their babies crawl around in the streets, like in that movie where he was always finding the baby in the street. What was that, Boys in the Hood? Get your baby out of the street. So it's not that there aren't legitimate issues. It's just the philosophy is how and who are the best people to step in and handle these things. Because if you really go back to the history of where these people came from, it was out of the racial hygiene, dysgenic, eugenic movement. And that's not an over the top statement. That actually is where they came from. So some of the stuff that the guys like Jones used to talk about, the police state stuff, some of that stuff was legitimate. When he said they were throwing chalk, when he used to do police state stuff, you know, and talk about them militarizing the police, they really were throwing chalk in the back of cars and doing things like that. So he kind of moved away from that, but it's real. And, you know, now I have to deal with it. Let me see here. I'll try to do the caller. I think if I can't, I'm not sure how. Okay, go.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, my name's Mike Conan. I don't have a lot of time to talk right now. I'm at work. I'm just trying to get a quick call in. I want to apologize to Bill. I'm sorry for calling in at the airport and creating a lot of controversy and problems. I was just trying to help. I could be a little, what do you call it, like unorthodox sometimes. But, yeah, anyway, there's a lot I'd like to talk about. I haven't been listening to the show tonight. I've like I said, I'm at work. But I don't know. Like, if you want to give me a call sometime or text me or whatever, I think you got my number, right? I don't know if you could see it or.
That's what happened, I think, last time. The thing is that from my end, what it shows is an 860 area code. Is that right?
Yeah. 860, and I don't want to say the rest, but...
No, I'm not going to, that's what I mean. I'm not going to say the rest. I guess that's it. It shuts up, though, before the thing does. So if I have a pen, I'll jot it down.
All right.
Let me see. So, yeah, you wanted to tell him... I haven't spoken to him all week because I had this crazy stuff, personal stuff going on, and that's what I did the show about. But I think I binge watched a bunch of videos, and I thought I heard one where he said something about somebody. And I guess, is that what you're referring to? Something about where a video or something?
Yeah, no, I didn't ask him to watch a video. I said I saw his video online on his website saying that he was in a financial bind, and I don't have a lot of money, but I wanted to help him out a little bit. I donated a little bit after that, but yeah, he didn't like that too much. But I don't know. I guess the message got miscommunicated. I think I get a little misunderstood too. Like when I comment and. Like, I know people on – I don't even have a Facebook anymore. When I was on Facebook, I think people used to take me the wrong way, you know?
That's what used to happen to me. It's the same thing. I even said that to Bill, too. I said I could never make
really?
A comment because you can't pick up the way the tone of the comment is, and you can't really – especially if you're very verbose like I am. I like to talk a lot. I could never make the comment short enough or make it sound the way it was in my head or the way I was saying it. So if you're, you know, if you're trying to comment, especially if it's about something that's nuanced, it's hard to kind of get that across in a comment. That's why I don't like that format at all. And it was Facebook was the problem.
You could be saying something, meaning it one way, and people take it completely different than how you meant
they
it.
Did.
But you can kind of see how that could be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no body language. But
no. And then you can't clarify it, and then you get everybody sees it, and then always the wrong people. Sometimes the final straw with Facebook for me was I made a comment to somebody that was private, just one-on-one. It wasn't like I was trying to hide it. I was just trying to write to somebody, and it had nothing to do with anybody else. And a bunch of people saw it, and then they all jumped in on the back. You know, somebody posted something that was political, and I just said, you know, I added to it a little bit, and somehow
I used to
go ahead.
I used to be like I don't know if there's a name for it. I think maybe like a political commentator or something on my local newspaper on Facebook and on their website. And
mm-hmm.
I'd get introduced around town and they'd be like, "Oh, is that you writing on there?" I was like, "Yeah," and I was they were like, "Oh, you write some really good stuff. I agree with it." And then other people though, they hated my guts. So
it happens.
I don't know.
It happens. You know what? Everything's getting so polarized now. I think people are just kind of people are getting with the times. I think they're just understanding now that it's kind of stupid, and everybody has different opinions, and it's become such a joke and like a meme where, you know, whether you're very mainstream in your viewership, it's just that I don't like that they encourage people. They encourage the polarization, but I think people are trying to see through it, and the facts are kind of, you know, are coming to the surface. But when we discuss this esoteric stuff, this real nitty gritty, we get to the real heart of some of these things that are kind of hidden topics. Then you have to be real careful of how clear you are with it, because people can lose the plot, and they really might not know what you're talking about from the jump. But always with politics, they're designed to get people to argue. That's really the nature of the beast with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I think as a whole, I think people are starting to understand that format with Facebook is that you know, families are always going to have members that love each other, but then they argue, you know, because they have like a cousin who's a cat lady and is a Democrat, and then there's like some guy that's like a hardcore conservative Republican, and they just completely clash when it comes to certain topics. But I think people are seeing through it. So
yeah.
Just,
hey, anyway, I got to get back in my job, but it was nice talking to you. And yeah, if you ever want to, you know, text message me or call me sometime. I'm usually
I got the number now.
Working pretty late, but. Yeah, during the day or on the weekend, it's best because I work nights. So.
All right, yeah, if I have a chance and I can get through some of this stuff, I would like to do that. So I'll tell him that you called in, and I'll try to clarify, you know, what happens. I don't know if he listened to the show or not, but I'll let him know what you said.
Yeah, I mean, I left him a message in when I donated some money. I left a message on that. But, yeah.
Yeah, that happens. Misunderstandings, it happens. He'll be all right. So just
he really didn't like it too much.
He gets angry sometimes.
I kind of don't blame him. But
no, he gets angry sometimes. Yeah. And I said to him, I said, "I was afraid to contact you for a lot of years." And he goes, "Why?" And he was like, "But that's just his personality. He's actually real cool. You know, when you get to talk to him and stuff." So I'll tell him, I'll let him know. And if there's, like I said, if there's anything more specifically that you want to say, go ahead. And if not, just I'll just relay that message just in case he doesn't hear this.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And if I can, I'll shoot you a text or something.
Yep.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling.
Bye. Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. Okay, we only have 3 minutes. That was cool that Mike got to straighten that out. I had such a busy week. I binge watched some of the videos at the last minute just in case there was going to be time to get into them. And yeah, I just heard a quick overview of what had happened. You know, sometimes it's a game in school where you play, where you whisper in the people's ear. I can't believe I'm forgetting the name. Telephone, you know, and you try to send a message to somebody and it could be totally innocent or whatever. And you might have really good intentions. You're just trying to help somebody. But by the time they get the message, you know, it gets all whacked out, which is kind of what the topic of this show is. It's about communications. Like Cool Hand Luke, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach, which is what we have here, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it any more than you do. That is what that film is all about, and that's true. So clarification, and especially in this day and age, you'd think that we'd be closer and more connected than ever. But as a matter of fact, I was saying that somebody's trying to call me. I was saying that it's hard to even though I explicitly stated not in between the hours of this to this to that person. Which is really rude because it throws me off. Well, anyway, that might be a me problem. But what happened was, see, now I'm forgetting. Communication is the key. Oh, that's what it was. In this age of interconnectedness where you can literally Skype anybody in your family, you could, in the old days, with long-distance phone calls, corded phones, all that sort of stuff, we had a call away. All right, I'm going to talk through the end of the show. I don't know if it'll clip off on the main show. It said 20 seconds. But the bottom line was really that it's actually harder to get in touch with people nowadays, and it's harder to get across what you're trying to say. And then when you do, people get offended. And you end up offending the wrong people, and the message doesn't get out far enough to the people that you're trying to or offend. So I just say it. I don't care where I am, even if I'm out in public. I don't try to be rude, but if it comes off that way a little bit, I just try to speak truth to power. And if people happen to be in the blast radius, then they get that. Sometimes it needs to be said. And if you feel that strongly about it, you know, so what? They walk away thinking what? Less of you? If it's how you really feel, you know, let it rip. And you live and you learn. That's how you learn the best, is the more you talk. You know, as a matter of fact, I think everybody should do Toastmasters or something where you can get up and just talk, especially off the cuff. And man, you will find out stuff about yourself that you may not even know, because you got to dig down and, you know, on the spot, come up with things. I don't know if the show ends or not, but you got to come up with stuff that, you know, maybe you didn't know or about yourself. You have to really bare your soul, and it forces you to be more articulate. And I don't want to say, I don't know why, but they say, oh, public speaking, it's one of the biggest fears most people have. I can understand why. I think it depends on what the topic is, though. If it's if you were at an AA meeting, you know, and you're forced to talk about yourself and your personal problems, then yeah, I could really see why you would be hesitant to get up in front of a room full of strangers and discuss your intimate most screw-ups and, you know, things that happen to you in your life. But, you know, I'm thinking more on along the lines of, what are some other venues besides politics? I would encourage people to get involved with things that they're passionate about. They were doing courses on, like, they broke them down into pods on vaccines and immunizations and, like, the history and how to get exemptions, whether you're in the military, whether you're traveling, this, that, or whatever. And whether you agree with that or not, about, you know, exempting yourself, you know, you might have an allergy. But it gets into the history and all that sort of stuff. And what it teaches you to do is to be able to speak from an informed stance in an articulate way, and to empower other people with facts. And then, you know, I don't know if you're trying to persuade them or not, but if you feel strongly about it, you know, then of course you probably would be. But that's better than these coercive tactics that, you know, that are deployed against us all the time. And let's say it's about, I'm going to go for all the hot button ones. Let's say it's about abortion and you want to speak truth to power and you want to say, listen, this is a very nuanced and emotional, it's a demagogue issue, meaning that they argue it from a place of emotion instead of facts. And the facts should, they don't have to ignore the emotional part, but the facts should be upfront, and you should call things what they are. And that's why when people ask me questions, I'm very verbose, and I try to be as thorough as I can be with an answer. If somebody's really honestly asking, and I think that I have the answer, if they're asking me a question, when it comes to opinions and things like that, well, you know what they say about opinions. But some of these topics, you know, that's a way in to discuss them, and they are important. I don't know why they use that expression that you shouldn't discuss politics or religion, I think it is, in polite company. It might be the whole expression. But actually, you know, in the old days, your religion was your politics. I think it still is. And why would you not be able to, if you were among friends or, you know, civil people, not be able to, if you could, articulate yourself, be able to discuss these things and elevate the discourse to a level where you're talking about complicated, you know, hot button issues and coming to some sort of a understanding about where, because let's say you did feel really strongly about that issue for on either side, and you went out and you were hamstrung by the rules of so-called polite society, and you couldn't really express yourself or talk about the way you really felt. if you were going to be in a working situation with these people, you know, and you had to do trust building exercises or whatever it might be, you know, sometimes it's good to know where the other person stands, and you can still respect them even if you have a difference of opinion. Some people have had personal experiences that color the way they see the world for whatever reason, good or bad, and they're just not there yet with certain things, or they haven't had personal experiences and they think they know. And, you know, hey, their opinion is just as valid. It's just that when I was working at this treatment place, there were two kinds of therapists. There were the kind that had personal experience and the kinds that didn't. And the people there did not want or respect any therapist that didn't have personal experiences. They didn't want to hear from them. They didn't want to talk to them. They didn't respect them. They didn't think that they respected them. They didn't like them. They thought they looked down on them. They thought they were being studied. So I think that the answer to speech, especially now with all of the YouTube, whether it's a platform or a publisher, which is the crux of the whole censorship, because YouTube's the big dog when it comes to that, even though they lose money every year. It's a money-losing platform, and it's out there to promote mainly shills and corporate sites now. But the censorship aspect is very real, and if they're just a platform, then it should be fair game, free for all. And the answer to the negative speech is more speech. And if somebody's saying things that aren't correct and they're maligning an entire group of people, then somebody should be able to easily get up and dismantle their argumentation. You know, the second you censor something, it becomes taboo and it gains more steam. But you know, these people are so adept at doing that sort of thing, and they have these game theory models, that maybe that's one of them. Maybe one of them is to promote something by banning it. And, you know, maybe that's the end game with all of that. The main thing is just to keep people arguing. They have the economy on lock. They make the money. They print the money. And they really can never go broke. They just have to figure out a way to float it. And they need your confidence and your faith. So just keep your faith and your confidence in there. And don't get too tied up in the whole transgender bathroom thing. I mean, my God, I'm not saying it's a wonderful thing, but it's a distraction that then they feed. And the SJW stuff, it was another thing to get people to say, oh, look, the liberals are crazy, and look at us conservatives. We're normal. You know, they're just common sense people are common sense people. They just want to divide people along the lines of politics. And sometimes, you know what, if you're discussing some of these real superficial things, it's easier to do it from that standpoint. It's easier to, instead of getting into the real esoteric parts, because other people, they don't know it. They don't understand. And some of the people that do get into the symbolism, they don't go far enough and they don't really get the symbolism. I was watching a preview because they're redoing The Watchmen. I guess it's a continuation of the movie. And when I watched the original trailer for it, sorry, I needed a drink. They, at the end it said, coming 3/6/9. Now, for most people, you know, that would just be, oh, that's a cool date. Or maybe the hands on the clock, 3/6/9. If you follow Bill's work, OCS 101, you know that those numbers, you know, they have a different meaning. That whole movie is sort of done as a pun. It's sort of all tongue-in-cheek. When the door gets kicked open, the guy that plays the comedian says, that's on The Walking Dead. I never saw the show he's on with The Walking Dead, but he says, it's only a matter of time, I suppose. Well, yeah, because he's a watchman. So the whole thing is done sort of in that way with they're playing around with time. They're at a funeral, and the one guy is reading a journal, so he's going metaphorically back in time, but they're standing over a coffin that's been lowered into the ground, and they're all thinking back. He's showing you how we can move forward and backwards in time, how it's relative in our head, and the different archetypes of thought in our head. The guy who thinks in black and white, the Rorschach test. The guy, and the reason why his mask moves, by the way, because so many people were like, I don't know how his mask moves, but it does. In the book, the reason his mask moves like that is there's a woman that came in for a dress. I don't know if it was her wedding dress or what. And the wedding dress had this weird material that the ink or something in it would squish, and it would, you know, move. And she gets killed, and it's one of his cases that sort of shaped him. So as a reminder, he couldn't save the girl or something. He cut the piece of the dress off and made it, fashioned it into that mask. So that's why it's constantly moving. It wasn't like a CGI thing. It wasn't a magical mask. It was just like it just was coincidental that that was the girl and he was Rorschach. So that was the reason his mask did that. Let's see, what was the other one? Then we were doing Hidden in Hollywood, a series, because I'll recap a little bit of the Hidden in Hollywood stuff from the anniversary show last week. There was a good series that they probably pulled most of it down, but you can still find on YouTube. Hidden in Hollywood, and it showed all this stuff in the movies that they had foreshadowed. I mean, they almost basically took out, the only thing they didn't do was take a billboard out and write, on this date, this will happen here to these buildings. I mean, they really beat people over the head with it, and they put it in everything. I mean, they really, really, really did. So what does that mean? That means that, and some of them would say, oh, it's just a coincidence. As a matter of fact, I even saw David Fincher, because I brought this up last week about the Israeli guy that funded, that produced all those movies, and Fight Club was one of them. And I was watching a YouTube video where it showed the author of Fight Club and it showed the director, David Fincher, with his very well-manicured nails and eyeshadow. And he said, the movie is blowing up buildings as The Graduate is about porking your friend's parents. Like it was a big metaphor. But the movie was about blowing up those buildings in a metaphorical fashion also. So they put all that stuff in there, and I just want to make sure I covered it all from last week. But yeah, man, this stuff it's ubiquitous, and it had been, and they're still kind of doing it. They made a movie afterwards that the guy that made Back to the Future made about the guy walking in between on the tightrope. And the thing that reminded me of that was Dan Aykroyd went on Joe Rogan's show, and he talked about, he opened the show talking about a guy on a tightrope who made his manager eggs. He walked across Niagara Falls and made the guy breakfast with a stove and his manager on his shoulders and fed him and then walked him back across. And it's funny because Joe Rogan was just like so rude to Dan Aykroyd. He was just kind of like condescending, and Joe Rogan's a moron, and for him to condescend to anybody, especially Dan Aykroyd, who's kind of like an autistic savant, you know, his mind is that quick And you kind of got to talk to him the way you would a, like, he's not the kind of guy you do that type of show with, where you just go, okay, we're just going to curse and it's no bullshit and we're just going to talk like a couple of guys do. Dan Aykroyd's a performer, and he has a certain way that he thinks that's very fast, and he's used to these structured types of interviews. So that show, and it's the way that his, that well, if you want to call it an interview style, the way that Joe Rogan interviews, just was, didn't suit him, and it was just very cringy. And when he talked about, because I didn't, couldn't watch the whole thing, it was just, it was horrible. It was horribly cringy. It was so bad. And God, I hate Joe Rogan. But what I really do, what happens, he looks like Tony Danza's son if he took like a ton of growth hormone or something and was bald. And got male pattern baldness because of it. And his nose is always shiny from like all of the, that's from testosterone. That's from TRT. His nose is always gleaming because it's just caked with, it's probably caked with blackheads and stuff. It's nasty. That stuff pools on your back and everything. It's really, really bad. So the dude is like a juice head, but he smokes a ton of pot, which you don't do if you're running the cycle. But he's interviewing him, and it's just terrible. And it was just going in different, and they're talking about Bigfoot and stuff. If you're going to play into all that and you're going to have fun, then you have fun. That's how you do that kind of interview. That's why I started interviewing people in the first place. When I saw Alex Jones do that train wreck of an interview with Fritz Ringmeier, I said, I could do this, and I could do it better. Because I knew that each different person, that's why this, my show is kind of off the rails. I'm used to interviewing people. And I get into the flow of how they talk and how they like to do their, everybody has a different way they carry themselves and talk and present their information. And you have to understand that and respect it. And the way he came off was so condescending. It's like, who the hell are you? And what has your career been? You got lucky with this shitty podcast because it was all about timing. You talked about the moon, all the stuff that you got famous off of, you renounced. Then you had all the mainstream people on. So now to get some credibility and to bring some life back into the show, you have all these people that are just in the opposite direction. So you have Shermer on, the skeptic guy. And then to counterbalance that, you get Bob Lazar and Dan Aykroyd. And who are you going to have? David Serrata on next. It's like, I want to say worse things, but it's like just piss off Joe Rogan. You're such a douche and I hate you, and you're trying to sell drugs to kids. So, you know, I hope you fall into a hole the next time you're bow hunting. You know, like in the cartoons, you fall into one of those like in Loki, in that movie where he goes, I've been falling for 30 minutes. That's what I hope happens. You fall into an infinite hole. But, and I'm sure it wouldn't be the first time that dude went looking for a hole to get in. He needs to crawl back into it. But yeah, I just can't stand him. And for some reason, his videos are always promoted towards me. Or I get the dialectical other side of the coin, which is Owen Benjamin, who actually looks like Buzz Lightyear. Look at Buzz Lightyear and look at Owen Benjamin, and they both got the same crazy eyes, the dimple on the chin, and I think they modeled the character off of him. He is Buzz Lightyear. And it's kind of funny because, you know, of his whole moon landing thing. So is there anything else to really get across about the whole, I don't want to say what it was, but the September thing. There was a lot to say. Everybody knows the main story. I think Bill has done the best stuff with the hanged man thing. I think everybody gets the symbolism. If you didn't, it's about the two hemispheres in the brain That's why at the end of Fight Club, you see the guy and the girl, and they're holding hands, and suddenly they're almost the same height. Now, I think Ed Norton is really about 5'11", and I don't think that the girl who's a Rothschild, Helena Bonham Carter, I don't think she's 5'11", but somehow they're about the same height. And then you see the two buildings fall down that are the two towers. Now, they're doing that because those are the two hemispheres, the masculine side and the feminine side. And just like the one tower had the antenna on the top, that was the male. So, you know, they're showing you this stuff. So you just have to ask yourself why, and then what did it accomplish? Whatever became of that? If you're very superficial, you'll say, oh, they were trying to do that as a pretext, go to war in the Middle East, and it was about oil and everything, and blah, blah, blah. I don't think it was. Not the whole thing. They could have, you know, done something else, you know, with an embassy probably, or something else that was less drastic to justify doing whatever they did. They did this very symbolic thing. And I think they did it at a certain time because the date is it's the same date they built the Pentagon, which is a pentagram. And that was Leslie Groves from the Manhattan Project. And what was that all about? Atomic energy. What's atomic energy? That reminds me of Far From Home with Spider-Man that Bill was doing a video on. He did the video on Spider-Man. He's got radioactive blood in the webbing. And he was talking about how it was a fractal. If you see the newest Far From Home, which I have not seen, I've seen the clip where he confronts Mysterio. There's a clip where he confronts Mysterio, and this is actually very well done. The guy has these drones that project images. So everything he doesn't have any powers per se. He just can show you things, and he can basically make you feel like you're hallucinating, and you can't punch anything because nothing's real. But if you see something, you don't know if it might be real or not, but you got to see the sequence. And the way the sequence is done is so well. And it's everything that Bill said in that one video. It was right there. So those are the things I saw in the midst of all this calamity, of all of this craziness that went on this week. And let me do a quick scroll through the history here up on this browser and see if there was anything, because sometimes certain things fall into place, like that's what it was. He was talking about Darth Vader, a guy wearing a Darth Vader shirt during the hurricane, Doreen, and the guy's shirt had a weird picture of Darth Vader, and he goes, what kind of picture is that? And I literally clicked on to YouTube right after I saw it, and that picture was on the opening page, and it said, the philosophy of Darth Vader, with that picture, that weird picture. So that's a very strange coincidence, because those are two different platforms. Yeah, there's a thing with Sylvester Stallone that I could get into, but it's not bad either. It's actually cool. Well, let's just put it this way. This new Last Blood movie that he's making, I know the guy that there was a whole story with the guy that wrote it and me. And he's really cool. And I got my fingers crossed that they're going to eventually make his original story, not this one, because they keep changing it and cutting him out at the last minute. And he's a good writer, and he's a really good guy. And basically what happened was that Stallone optioned his book years ago, and he never did anything with it. He kept saying he was going to do it, and then every 10 years or whatever it's been, He keeps saying he's going to turn it into a movie, but he never did. And this guy, I think he doesn't get the money until he actually does something with it. So I think that it would be really good if he finally did, you know, get it going. It would be cool to see. I was literally, you know, on the edge of my seat when I saw this this news. I was like, oh, thank goodness, you know, this is a really good thing for a really good guy. And then they said, no, they dropped that idea, but maybe they're going to produce it later on. So they took elements from it, but they didn't adapt it. It's going to be, and it was written, it was, the book was written at, with Stallone in mind as the main character. And it was similar to Predator. And they just keep stringing this guy along, basically saying, yeah, they're going to make this, they're going to make this, they're going to make this. And he's a really a good writer. Now, I met him. And he signed his books to me. We were roommates for a while, and I got to know his, you know, his life story and everything, and we became friends genuinely before I knew he wrote or anything. And then he got a package and he threw the books across the room. And he goes, "Oh, here's my books." He didn't, wasn't throwing them at me; he was throwing them to me. And I was like, "Holy crap!" And what happened was that I didn't pick up the book and read it until many weeks later. I was like, wow, this is a really, really well-written, really good book. And then combined with the fact that the guy was a solid, nice, you know, down-to-earth guy, I was like, this is like a fairy tale for somebody to, you know, write something like this and then have it produced in Hollywood. But then it didn't happen. And then another year, and it kept going by. And every time there was a rumor that it was going to happen, and then all of Stallone got more famous with this Expendables and Rocky again and resurrecting all these old franchises. And it was like, oh, maybe it's going to happen now. And I was like, surely it'll happen after the Creed movie and the other one, the Expendables. And instead, I see an article that says he wants to make another Rocky movie. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, this happens for this dude, because I think he needs it to happen. You know, I don't think he's desperate or anything. He's very self-sufficient, but I just mean that it would really change his life in a good way, and it would be so cool. So we'll see, and I'll tell the whole story if they, because they're very close. I'll tell the whole story if they release the information about it. I'm a little bit, I'm trying to read as I'm going. Other than that, I guess the last thing, because I don't know why this popped up, so I'm just going to say it. There was a thing I saw about Stoffel, I guess his name, the badger that can escape from anywhere. Honey badgers, masters of mayhem. And it, at first I thought it was funny. I didn't know why it popped up on my feed. I was in a bad mood with all this stuff going on, and it gave me a chuckle to see that this creature was so smart. There is no other word. It worked as a team with the other honey badger, and it unlocked its bolted cage. And then I read the comments, and somebody goes, if it could work a bolt-action rifle, then, you know, you could arm that thing and send it into war. And it really was that smart. Every cage this guy devised for this honey badger, it would either dig up rocks or dirt or berry. It would come up with ingenious ways to escape. I mean, it really was amazing. And my dad, because I was like, why did this show me this? Why is this coming up here? What is the metaphor here? My dad had always told me to read the book, The Honey Badger. And I didn't think about it until after I saw this. And I was like, maybe I will go back and look up that book and read it. So that was in there. And if it resonates with anybody for whatever reason, check it out. It was pretty funny. And you will be very astonished at how smart this thing is. It even showed up at the guy's house. He got a knock at the door, or like something broke the door, and he thought it was a burglar. And the honey badger came to his house. It was crazy. But they're kind of like wolverines. They're weasels, I think. I'm not sure where on the taxonomic scale they fall, but that's what they are. Well, you guys get the idea with the whole Hidden in Hollywood and the symbolism and all that. And I kind of got a headache. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut this one short. I kind of did two completely different shows. Listen to the first part. Think about the philosophy of our institutions and, you know, what benefits they serve. And where we're at after all this stuff's gone on and why they do the things that they do. On the flip side, at the end of the show, two things to think about. And honey badgers. Where do we fit in all of this madness? Okay. Have a good night. Stay safe. Bye-bye.